Okay, we are back. You are listening to Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. We have on the line with us this morning Mike Barker from Investment and Retirement Management. Mike's a regular with us. He's a chartered retirement planning counselor. He's also a certified fund specialist offering securities through Linsco Private Ledger, member of NASD and SIPC. And good morning, Mike.
Dave, good morning.
We missed you last week.
Well, it was a busy week, and you were real busy. And
it was a crazy week, and you know we had talked several times, and just what's transpired between last Friday and today, to me, is kind of interesting, especially after we've talked about volatilities so much. And it seems to me, at least the impression that I've been able to gather is, or at least from watching, it seems to me that the market wouldn't need a whole lot of impetus to drop. And I think it did. What was it down? 360-some-odd points last Friday.
Right.
And then at the open on Monday, it dropped another, I think it was somewhere in the range of 100 points. And it ended back up just about where it started. And I know it's been up and down since then. It just seems to me that if the market needed any kind of impetus to fall, it's seen it over these last 5 days.
Yes, at several angles to that, I think. And I think what you have to do is you and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, and I was kind of outlining how our work was telling us that the market probably was a little bit ahead of itself, was probably way too euphoric over the Fed rate cut that came about a month ago.
Uh-huh.
And then we got back above 14,000 on the Dow again and went to new records and all that hoopla started. Our work was just showing us that the risk was to the downside. Doesn't mean it has to happen, of course, but you have to kind of play the setup and look at the odds, so to speak. And we just had a setup that the market was severely overbought, and I won't get into a big long spiel about what overbought means, but let's just say it was ahead of itself. And it seemed to be a little confusing as to why the market was celebrating so much, so to speak, when there were still things out there brewing that were not positives, and you know, housing and what's going on in the credit markets and other things. And it's somewhat of a knee jerk, I think, when the market got that big rate cut by the Fed, which was a half percentage point. And as we mentioned back then, the market kind of has this automatic reaction, it seems, that, okay, everything's wonderful, the Fed's on the scene, they're going to ride into town and fix everything. And while that may or may not be true going forward, it certainly isn't going to be true in a hurry. It's going to take time. And the other thing we talked about was the housing problems, which we've talked about for months now. That problem, regardless of whether you think it's going to get worse or not, it's a slow-moving thing, and it's going to take a while, even if it has bottomed, which I don't think it has yet, but even if it has, it's still going to take a while for that to quit being an anchor on the economy, so to speak. So all that's kind of the setup, I think, and Friday last week was a perfect example of how the market can drop a big number in a hurry when it's in that technical condition. And now you lead up to where we are now. We've had an interesting week, a very interesting week, and just looking at Wednesday as an example, well, let's go back to Friday last week. Friday down getting close to 400 points on the Dow and closed right at the lows, just not a good close at all. And a lot of folks worried about Monday this week and all that, and Monday could have gotten ugly. I'm surprised it didn't get a little uglier than it did, and it ended up being a reasonable day. But looking at Wednesday this week is another great example. The Dow was down almost 200 points at one point this Wednesday, and I was beginning to think we might break the lows that we hit that previous Friday and Monday on Wednesday this week, and all of a sudden the Dow starts going straight up and finishes basically flat on the day, which was mind-boggling to me. Regardless of whether you're optimistic, pessimistic, whatever you think about the market here, short-term or long-term, Wednesday was very perplexing. And I talked to a lot of folks that have been doing this a lot of years, and they were equally baffled about Wednesday. Now, there were some rumors flying Wednesday afternoon, apparently, about the Fed maybe doing an emergency rate cut and all that kind of stuff, which I didn't think was valid at all. But anyway, that gives you an idea of what is going on in this market, and it's very edgy. It's got a nervous feel to it. That doesn't mean negative necessarily, but it's edgy, and it would not take much to send this market down in a hurry. But with that said, and I think you alluded to it a little bit, if I've ever seen a market that just seems to shake off about everything, it's this one. So it's an interesting time. It's perplexing to a large degree to me, but I looking at it at the moment and looking at the model and everything else we look at, I don't think the downside work is done just yet.
You know, when you were talking, you made me think of something. Remember back in during the dot-com boom, certainly people got a hold of them or got ahead of themselves at that point.
Oh, absolutely.
And I remember we talked about this any number of times. Greenspan, who was the chairman of the Fed at that time, called it irrational exuberance. And I guess that was due in some part to the fact that you had sort of non-seasoned investors, novice investors almost, who would tend to get more excited or get depressed over things that a seasoned investor maybe wouldn't. Is there an element of that in the market? What happened to all these people? Are they seasoned now? Did they get out of the market? Are we seeing any element in the market of these people now?
Well, it's interesting. The NASDAQ, for example, there's all kinds of ways to answer that question. What's interesting, boy, there's so many things to talk about there. What's interesting about that question, I think, is a couple of things maybe. What has been doing so well lately is some of the technology stocks. And before I get into this, folks don't need to read into anything I say at the moment about whether they should buy tech stocks or not. I'm not implying anything, and I'm not going to get into that buy or sell stuff on the show. But anyway, there's beginning to be signs that some of that is going on again in some tech stocks. And as an example, back in the late 90s and early 2000, when the NASDAQ was over 5,000, that was, as you say, the dot-com boom. It reached the point that anything that had the name dot-com in it was going to go up big. And some of these companies had no earnings, didn't have projected earnings anytime in the near future, and all this sort of thing. But the hoopla and the exuberance, as you put it, was going on off the chart. And you have stocks going up and up and up, and the market was being carried pretty much by one sector of the market. The only reason I get into that is now, looking at the NASDAQ, and I know this has nothing to do with the floor covering industry or the show per se, but to answer your question, looking at the NASDAQ, most of the gains this year, no, I'm sorry, about half the gains this year have come from three stocks, Apple, Google, and my mind just went blank. I think the third one's Baidu. But anyway, it's three stocks. It's Research in Motion, Apple, Google, and Research in Motion. And that's part of why I think the downside work in this market's not over yet. The breadth of the market, the number of stocks participating in the latest up move has shrunk, and it's being carried by fewer and fewer stocks. So it's just a situation where the technical parts of the market aren't the best. Now, obviously, the market could continue up, and it could pull up a lot of these stocks that don't seem to be participating, and all of a sudden you fix that problem. So we're watching that element of the market a little bit closer than normal. But even the technicals on this latest up move in the market that put the Dow back above 14,000 briefly was not that great either. So there are just some things that just don't look as good as you would like to see them. It does not mean the market has to drop a lot to correct that. The market can do what it wants to do. But it's just something we're looking at, and it just is a little bit concerning. So with that, we still think there's a little more work to do on the downside. Now, as far as this exuberant stuff and all of that, there are some considerable differences now in some of these tech stocks we're talking about as compared to the late 90s. I mean, these companies are... they have earnings, they have growing earnings, so there are a lot of differences. But my point is, anytime you have stocks that are up as much as some of these are, whether you think it's hoopla or hysteria or whatever, You just have to understand that if these things do start down, it could be pretty big in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
So, and admittedly, some of these stocks are far higher than I would have anticipated anyway. So you can take all that for what it's worth. But I think there is an element of what you're talking about in certain parts of that that part of the market. But where it's really interesting is in China. And that's a long conversation, too, but it's to the point now. If you took FloorRadio.China public next week, you'd probably make a fortune.
Well, hey, let's talk after the show on that.
Yeah. But what is going on in the Chinese markets, my goodness, it's almost not like a stock market over there with what's happening with the up moves, and it's beyond amazing. But that's another topic for another day. But if you want to talk about some hoopla and hysteria and things a little bit out of control, look at China. A lot of parts of the Chinese markets have actually done far more than the NASDAQ did in the late 90s, believe it or not.
I see. Well, I remember we had talked, it wasn't so many months ago, about China and the fact that we may see that come, I won't say crashing down, but dropping appreciably. Does that, I suppose, that's still a possibility?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. China, and don't get me wrong, I cannot tell you the day. I'm smart enough to know that no one knows the day when China's going to, you know, experience some rough times. But now, of course, that's an amazingly fast-growing economy and all sorts of dynamics going on over there. So there are things there to point to this kind of growth in their markets and their economies, for sure. But folks better be careful over there in any of these emerging-type markets. And that's not to say folks should not have exposure there. I'm not implying that. I'm just saying in certain parts of that Chinese market, when the day comes that starts down, it could get really ugly.
I got you. Back to the market here, Mike. The fact that it's had opportunity to fall several times, starting with the 367-point drop last Friday, again this past Wednesday, does the fact that it didn't drop tell you something interesting about the market itself?
Well, actually, not at this point. I mean, we were pretty good ways above 14,000 not too many days ago, and now we're, you know, low to mid 13s, and again with the stuff I outlined earlier with the technicals and some other things, I think there's more work to do on the downside. And you know, a lot of people are asking, well, how much more? Well, you can't answer that. You just have to look for a signal that's telling you that may be the bias, and if it develops, then you analyze it as it goes. But to your point there, the one thing that is interesting about this market, and actually has been since about this time a year ago, is when the market does have these big, ugly drops that happen in a hurry, and last Friday's a good example, it seems to take care of that in a big hurry. And just in the last few days, we're even beginning to see little signs that maybe it's not taking care of last week's drop quite as well as it has been.
I see.
So, and I know that's somewhat vague, but if I get into it all in detail, we're talking another hour probably. But we're just seeing things in the model, the technicals, the structural parts of things, even the sentiment, the psychology of the market, so to speak, that continue to look to me anyway like we're still a little bit ahead of ourselves, and that there are some things out there still brewing that the market, at least up until a couple of weeks ago, seems to think aren't that big of a problem, and we happen to think they are. So the market's wrestling with that right now, and what's interesting about the immediate short term here is the Fed meets next week. And folks who were betting the market was going to go down big the last time the Fed met, they know what happened to them then, because Bernanke lowered rates a half percentage point, and we were onward and upward. So Bernanke has demonstrated an ability to make some big moves, and I think some folks will be nervous going into next week either way. So,
well, Mike, the Fed, as you mentioned, the Fed met or is going to meet next week. Well, from what I read, a lot of people seem to think there's going to be a rate cut. What do you think?
Well, it's I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. but Bernanke's a little bit hard for me to figure, just to be blunt about it. you know how it always is. You get into what do you think they should do, and then you get into what do you think they're going to do, and it spins your head around. Basically, the consensus is they lower rates next week. Whether it's 25 basis points or 50, we could talk about that all day and probably not come up with a conclusion. Which one it'll be, I don't know. I think the odds are that they'll lower rates again. With what's going on in housing and the credit markets, and by the way, I think a lot of folks don't realize this, but the market, I believe it was on Monday at the low, was basically where it was before the Fed lowered rates last month. And many of the financial stocks, not getting into specifics here, but many of the financial-related stocks are lower than they were before the Fed cut rates a month ago. So the reason I bring that up is that leads us to our conclusion about thinking the market's a little ahead of itself, thinking that the Fed's going to magically fix all this stuff in a hurry. It's going to take some time for this stuff to work itself out, and I think we're seeing that in the market in many of these financial stocks that are right at or even lower than where they were before the Fed cut rates.
Well, if the Fed does cut rates, it seems to me then that's going to say, gosh, things really are worse off than we thought they were. If the Fed and Mr. Bernanke is saying that we need to, or they need to cut rates by as much as 50 basis points, I don't guess that's going to make people very euphoric, is it?
Well, that's a good point. I'm glad you bring it up because I just wasn't thinking about it at the moment. But that was one of the discussions going into the last meeting. I said I thought they would lower a quarter percentage point, and there were two reasons I said that. One was that they didn't want to go too far too fast, and they wanted to show they were going to be methodical and all of that sort of thing, and not give people the impression that things really are bad and that they have to lower rates big and in a hurry. And I was actually, I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or if you and I talked about it off the air or what, but I remember making a comment to you that if they lower rates a half percentage point and lower the discount rate another half percentage point, that it very well could make people think, oh my gosh, things must be pretty bad out there. But the market didn't look at it that way, at least not initially. But I think it may be doing that now. And as I always say, you have to be very careful in the market, especially around certain data points, like the employment report, for example, we've talked about. But the Fed meeting is another good example. You don't want to look at the first two or three days and conclude, okay, this is how the market's going to react from here. And this last Fed cut's a perfect example with how much we've come down since that initial celebration, so to speak. So going into next week, I think some element of that is still on the meeting. But I tell you, Dave, this market right now, and this market lately, trying to get a sense of how this market's going to read things is pretty tricky. It's as tricky as I've ever seen it. But
and they are meeting on Halloween this year.
Yeah.
Or this time.
Yeah.
I guess that might tell you something. A spooky meeting, maybe.
Yeah, who knows?
Do they
trick us or treat us? I don't know.
We'll have to see on that. Let me ask you about our buddies at Mohawk. We've talked about that over the last couple of conversations. Their earnings have come out. We've had the conference call on the program. What are your thoughts? Anything jump out at you there?
Well, it was a lengthy call, and I'm looking at the transcript here, and it's 28 pages, so it's hard to kind of pick out certain things. But there were two or three things, I guess, that jumped out at me, and if you're an investor or whatever, thinking about it and being in Mohawk or however you want to look at it. And again, as I always say, do not read into this and try to draw conclusions as to whether I'm saying you should buy this or sell it or whatever. That folks have to call me for that. But two or three things jumped out at me. One, and I'm just quoting here, and this was a comment from Jeff Wolverbaum during the call. Quote, the U.S. economy is slowing, but most economists do not anticipate a recession. The housing and flooring industries are in a significant downturn and have deteriorated as credit markets tightened with more conservative lending standards and higher interest rates for greater risk policies. We believe all major flooring categories of carpet, ceramic, and wood are down in volume 15 to 25% from their peaks, and we do not see any indication of near-term improvement. That's kind of the overall where do they stand thing you want to look for in a conference call like this. So that's the first thing. The second thing, and I wanted you always want to look at the guidance, and you've gone through the guidance on the show with the earnings and all that, so I won't repeat all that, but you want to look at maybe what is some of the thinking. And the part of the call that really touches on that, and again, this is Jeff Lorberbaum talking, quote, you have to start with the first piece that the revenue side of the business is very difficult to predict, but we have a very limited forward view of revenues. We have a limited view of our energy costs and raw material costs for the same reason. So basically, those things are moving almost daily with the market, and so we don't really have a clear view of the revenue side and the cost side. It's very volatile, and we just don't have it. So there's a lot of guesswork in these numbers, and we are trying to give reasonable estimates of what could be a rational range, end quote. The thing that's interesting about that comment, and I totally understand it and see where Jeff's coming from with that, he talks about how where he says things are moving almost daily with the market, and we just can't get a clear perception of a lot of this. That is absolutely correct. And it's good to see, a person in his position with a company this big, saying this stuff is volatile. It's difficult to make these real tight predictions and all of that. And that was good to see, and I thought it was interesting that he explained it in that way. I think that was good. Another thing jumped out at me, and they were talking about this is just a comment about just a general comment. And again, this is Jeff. Quote, what's happened recently is the revenue growth that we've had has dramatically exceeded our own expectations that the investments we've put in the U.S. marketplace are operating more efficiently, end quote. And what he was talking about there is a question about where are they seeing certain things that look good, and why are they better than they thought in some areas and that sort of thing. And on that topic, with a little more detail here, and Dave, you let me know if you get tight on time. And we've talked about Unilin for the last two or three quarters and about how that's where the upside surprises were, and that the U.S. wasn't really great, generally speaking, but the foreign exposure has really helped out Mohawk. And we've talked about how you have to look at, let's just say Mohawk. You have to look at Mohawk differently than you ever have in the past because of this, and some other reasons too. But with this foreign exposure, puts a different dynamic in this thing. And just real quick on this one, Dave, and again, this is Jeff talking, quote, I mean, backing away from the business as a whole, the Unilin business, the sales were higher than we had anticipated, the margins were better than we had anticipated, and almost all markets and all product categories. The Dow tile business was actually better than we had anticipated. I mean, the ceramic industry, we are getting it off in the mid-teens and units. So all of the investments that we have been putting in the Unilin business over the last few years, and he says, I mean in the Dow tile business, continue to pay dividends. At the same time, we have a higher portion of the commercial market, which is tending to do better. Mm-hmm. We got positive surprises there, and we didn't do quite as well as I'd like to do in the Mohawk side. We are taking steps, we think, to get it where we'd like it to be. End quote. So there is a good analysis, or a good description, I should say, as to why things were so much better at Unilin in the past, and were again. They're just hitting on things on all elements better than we had expected. Mm-hmm. So those type things just jump out at me, mainly because Unilin seems to be the part of Mohawk that's really doing well and better than folks had expected and modeled and all of that. And this is some of the comments related to that.
Uh-huh. Now, after the earnings came out, after the conference call took place, I think we saw an upgrade and a downgrade, and I guess people, as you mentioned, reacting to their guidance, which I guess was below a lot of the analysts' expectations.
Yeah, and I don't think that really surprised anyone. If you remember, before the earnings came out on the show, you and I were talking, and I even mentioned that I just didn't expect to see a whole lot of optimism out of Mohawk as far as going forward.
They're noted for being pretty conservative, even in good times.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Dave, and this is the last comment I had on the call, I'm glad you mentioned that because I had forgotten this. Someone asked the question, and this is one of the questions I was going to ask, but they had to cut the call off, and then this guy asked the question anyway, so it was interesting. And this is Eric Bussard from Cleveland Research, and I hope I pronounced his name correctly. It's either Bussard or Bussard, but anyway. He says, quote, "And the upside in Unilin, which has been a consistent theme, is this a function of true outperformance or just continued conservative expectations on your part?" End quote. That's a good question because you always want to know, and we've talked about this over the years with just earnings in general, with the market in general. When companies come out and beat estimates, is it just because they were so conservative with their guidance? Or is it that the business was far stronger than they could have anticipated? Is it that they were more efficient than they thought? You have to ask these top questions.
Right.
So, and Jeff's comment response was, quote, "It's difficult, and we are in two marketplaces in Europe, and here they are both very mature markets. Unilin has a strategy in Europe that is towards the mid to high end. It's very focused on that piece, and to have double-digit growth in mature markets over there, and then the U.S., all of this business goes into the residential replacement business over here, which is under significant pressure in today's marketplace to have mid-teen growth rate. It's difficult to sit back and predict that, and we are glad to have it," end quote. Good point there as well. And I think, and this is just my opinion now, I think a lot of the tone of this call, which I think is perfectly in order and actually good to see, is there were a lot of comments throughout the call with how volatile certain parts of the market are and raw material cost, energy prices, all of that, which is absolutely true. I don't think a lot of people, folks in the marketplace out there, I don't think a lot of people truly realize how volatile things have been lately. And it makes it very difficult, whether you're in a CEO position or what have you, or even in our position, it's pretty tough to predict this stuff with any tight ranges, as volatile as things are.
Exactly.
And in the U.S. market, forget Unilin and all that, but looking at the U.S. market, not specifically to Mohawk, just in general, with housing like it is, with it's going to be interesting to see what shape the consumer is in the next 1 to 3 months. And with all of that, and then you throw in what's going on with crude oil prices and the Federal Reserve, tough to predict business patterns going forward. And Mohawk's conveying that, and I think it's perfectly in order.
I hear you. Let me switch gears here before we run out of time. We had talked about oil about probably every time we've talked on the air. In the last couple of times, And since then, I guess oil has hit somewhere in the $90 range. It went over 90. It's been right up in the upper 90s ever since.
Yeah, upper 80s.
Upper 80s ever since. What are you seeing going forward? I think you said you didn't think that the next move would be down. What are your thoughts?
I'm still in that position. I just would not bet the next move in crude oil of any significance will be down. I just don't see that. And that's interesting. A lot of times folks will ask me what I think something is going to do next, you know, which way the next big move will be, whether it's crude oil, the market, or whatever. And someone pointed this out the other day, and I thought it was pretty interesting, and he's correct. He said that when you and I were talking back when crude oil was in the low 80s, and I made the comment that I would not want to bet the next big move to be down because my model is just not set up and is not giving the indicators that it has in the past to indicate that the next big move would be down. And this individual pointed out, he said, if I'm not mistaken, you know, in the last several quarters, he said, this is the first time that we've had a big up move in crude oil, and your model was not telling you that the next big move was down. I said, that's absolutely right. And then he said, well, doesn't your gut tell you that the next move is down? And I said, I said, well, I quit listening to the gut a long time ago. You just go with the model. And it was surprising to me that the model was not indicating a down move, but it wasn't. And I'll go with that every time, regardless of what I think. And this has been a perfect example of why you have to do that. Kudo's done nothing but go up since then. It's dropped a little during the last few weeks, but nothing of significance, and just went straight back up.
Yeah.
So I still don't see anything to tell me that it's going to move down in a big way anytime soon. Now, whether it goes up big from here, I don't know. But I don't see what I would normally see to indicate a down move. And gas prices, I would not be surprised at all to see in the next, say, 1 to 3 weeks, gas back above $3 a gallon across the board. So, that's the trickiest part of it at the moment, I think. But I think that's what we'll see anyway, and we'll see what happens.
I got you. Just to wrap up, what are you going to be focusing on going forward now?
Well, of course, the Fed meeting's next week. That's going to be a tricky little juncture, I think, next week for the market. But as I mentioned earlier, I'm still seeing the indicators that tell me there's a little more work to do on the downside in this market. It could do that in a day. It could take a few days or weeks to do that. I don't know. You just have to read that as we go. But right now, the setup I see is for some work on the downside. And whether it's going to be anything big, can't answer that. You just want to see if it even starts to happen. And then if it does, you analyze it from there to try to get a sense of it. So that's pretty much where we stand at the moment. All that to say, I would really be surprised to see much big on the upside right now.
I got you. We're going to leave it right there. Always a pleasure, Mike.
Okay, Dave. And Dave, I know your granddaughter's had some heart surgery. Hope everything goes well with that, and we'll keep you in the thoughts and prayers.
Well, she's doing fine, and I appreciate you saying that.
Great news. We'll just we hope that continues.
Thanks very much, Mike.
You're well.
We've been talking with Mike Barker. He's a regular on this program. He's with Investment and Retirement Management, and this is Floor Radio.